وما كانت من الأسياتنا عنهم جن شلاكا تكشور النيل تامين التسمى الشيء بدأ بنا
Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 3, Text 19. Indian cultural life is based on dharma. Indian cultural life, there's a difference between culture and cultural life. How dharma is defined, that is often difficult exactly to ascertain. Dharma is often translated in English as religion, but actually it doesn't translate exactly as religion. Prabhupada often translates dharma as prescribed duties or occupational duties. So that gives some idea of the implications of dharma at the ordinary level. But even not only modern scholars, but even in ancient times, different acharyas, they gave different ideas of what dharma should be. What dharma means. Whatever exactly it may be, dharma is that which every follower of sana, of the Vedic culture would adhere to. Dharma comes from the root dhri, which means to support or to hold. That would be in your pronunciation.
Yes.
In Tamil pronunciation. Dhru or dhri, either way. In dharma, some parts of India, they would pronounce ri, in other parts, they pronounce ru. So in Tamil, you would say dhru. Prabhupada explained that this meant that dharma means the inherent nature of every living being. And gave the example, just like sugar is sweet, that is just like the dharma, the inherent characteristic of sugar. If we taste sugar and we find it's bitter, then we know that actually it can't be sugar. Or there's another possibility that it is sugar, but that we are sick with jaundice. In which case, we don't recognize what is the actual position. So Prabhupada explained that actually the dharma, Prabhupada explained means according to Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. Prabhupada explained that the dharma of the jiva is to serve. Every jiva must serve.
Over jiva no seve seyano.
That is his inherent nature. So if we don't serve Krishna, then we end up, we talk about serving the nation, very prominently being promoted in India at the present time. Although previously there was no such idea of nationalism in India. There wasn't even any so-called nation as India till the British put it all together. And people think that, well, the duty of every India is to support in the struggle against Pakistan. But Pakistan is also part of India. In the Shastra, that is all considered part of Bharatvarsha. So this is all, this division of India in the first place is all artificial.
India.
And this nationalism is artificial. Our real duty is to serve Krishna, not to serve whoever that happens to be the present prime minister. So we serve our nation, we serve our community. We find in India people are split up into different castes, Brahmanas and Dalits and Ayas, Ayengas, there are so many different divisions. Then we like to serve our, just now I was in Turin El Veli, so there's some kind of medical students or something on strike. It's funny how they can be on strike because they're only studying, they're not doing anything for anyone else. They're taking instruction, but somehow they went on strike. Yeah. So the man living next door, he used to come to our programs. I asked, where is he? Oh, he's gone to Madras to join the protest, the strike. So he's identifying with his group that we are all medical students or whatever it is, and now we all have to go and strike for our rights. Or we serve our family. That's all right. One should also serve different groups that we are in contact with. Because a man lives as a social animal. So everyone has to cooperate with everyone else. There's no use thinking, well, I'm a Brahmana, then reject the Shudras. Because if you say, we don't want to have anything to do with the Shudras, then you won't, nothing will go on in society. They do the practical work.
You ever heard it?
Practical. Vyavaharik is Sanskrit. You don't say internal. So like this, all these worldly dharmas are there, but ultimately they're all, everything is meant for serving Krishna. But because people don't understand Krishna, they are confused as to actually what dharma is. Atah pumbhya dvijasrishta vanashrama vibhagashaha svanushtitasya dharmasya sangsidhya haritoshanam. The perfection of dharma by following the Varnashram system is by performing our work to satisfy Hari. But generally people, they can't see beyond the materialistic level. And therefore that they think that dharma is simply to perform my materialistic duty. Of course, that is much better than not following worldly dharmas or duties. That is the beginning stage of understanding religion. The different levels of consciousness have been described in the Puranas. Annamai, pranamai, jnanamai, vijnanamai, anandamai. The first stage is pranamai, where one is simply conscious of himself. I'm hungry, I need food. Scream. Someone should put some food in my mouth. Oh, sorry, that's annamai. That's the first stage. Food consciousness. Then pranamai, to be conscious of other living beings. That maybe I shouldn't just scream when I need food. I mean, maybe other people need food also. Then jnanamai, that means to become conscious of the mental plane and to start to become conscious of the subtleties of life. And specifically to inquire into transcendental knowledge. Then vijnanamai means to understand that we are all spiritual beings. We have nothing to do with this material world. And anandamai means to fully enter into spiritual life. That means into spiritual existence. So, in the beginning stage, one is simply interested in oneself. So this is just like animals. I mean, even the animals, they cooperate with each other to some extent, some of them. So the Varnashram system starts off by regulating people so that they perform duties for others, of giving people, gradually helping them to understand a higher consciousness, consciousness of higher duty. They teach that you have to perform pious activities in this world so that you can go to the heavenly planets and enjoy them better. So this is a combination of, this gives a combination of self-interest and helping others. Self-interest and community or consciousness of helping others, these usually don't go together. But the Karmakanda section of the Vedas says, do charity, give charity, dig wells, do activities beneficial for others, that will be beneficial for you. So, you keep for yourself. They mostly need to hear in Tamil. So, people do pious activities thinking in future I will get the result enjoying myself. So this, even in a very gross way in the beginning, it takes people away from just being totally grossly exploitive of others. For instance, one could have the opportunity to steal someone's money, and then you can immediately enjoy. But if you think, no, I shouldn't do because I will be punished in future. But if I don't steal it, that will be a pious activity, so I can go to heaven. So the whole thing is going on the platform of self-interest, but it regulates him to develop better quality. And it also gives some idea that, well, there is, life is not simply finished at death. I can be born again, either in heaven or hell. So then he also imbibes the idea that I am eternal. So gradually he can come to understand that anyway, this material world is miserable. Even if I go to the heavenly planets, that's also miserable. so that he may actually start to develop real spiritual inquiry. Now, at the same time, it's teaching us not to be grossly selfish. So by denying oneself immediate sense pleasure so that one can perform service to others, one may start to take pleasure in that. Or following the Vedic directions, for instance, for sense control, one may start to find some kind of pleasure in that. So gradually one may come to the platform of being induced to perform one's duties without wanting anything in return. So then he comes to the stage of nishkam karma, performing one's duties without any personal desire. So one is trained in one's duties. One has to perform certain duties for the sake of dharma. And so you'll find that traditionally in Indian culture, there's a very strong sense of duty. Now in the modern age, this is being imported from the West like everything else. There's more emphasis on individual rights. Previously, there was no emphasis on your rights. Simply, you have to perform your duty, and the result, whatever comes, that is your karma. But because everyone was trained to follow dharma, then generally there was people were not asking for rights because their needs were fulfilled. So the emphasis on rights rather than duty is actually, it's not conducive for peace in society, nor is it conducive for the uplift of the individual. Because when everyone is thinking my right, then no, I've got more right. And so it becomes competitive. Just like previously, women used to think, it's my duty to serve my husband. And now they think, why? Why should I serve? They have equal rights. And therefore, there's fighting in every home. So you may think, well, you know, it's not fair, but you may think it's not fair, but at the same time, previously people were living very peacefully and happily. And now everyone is very advanced and progressive and intelligent, and no one is happy. So it's actually more intelligent to accept a submissive role and keep the peace. But they've had independence. They're getting married at the age of 99 or something like that. So they're not going to submit to anybody. So actually this idea of rights, this increases material attachment. My right. I have got the right to do this and that and everything else. My right. Me, 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 me. Whereas in the sense of dharma, duty is promoted. What is our duty? So to perform service selflessly, this promotes detachment. We may like to do it or not like to do it. There is no question. We have to do it. It is our duty. It's very hot. It's the month of Vaishak. And still you have to cook. You may think, well, why should we bother? We'll go out to the restaurant and buy something. Or we'll phone up and they'll bring the pizza to our door. No, it is your duty to cook. It may be very hot. By ordering a pizza from the restaurant, then you avoid the difficulty of cooking. But you don't get the pleasure of your husband's satisfaction. So in the Vedic culture begins by giving a strong duty. We all have duty. They're saying, why should the wife be submissive to the husband? But the husband also has to be submissive. The husband submits to the guru. And the wife submits to the husband. She sees as guru. And in this way, the whole society is guided on the spiritual path. But in the modern age, no one submits to everyone. My right. I am an individual. I know better than others. Even we accept a guru, but then we think, well, you know, my guru, he doesn't know so well. I also read Bhagavad Gita. So I know what to do. And then the whole thing becomes a farce. So this sense of dharma, that is required in human society. I was saying that people, they're trying to define dharma. They can't define it. We can define it very easily. Vaishnavas can easily define dharma. Dharma means ultimately to surrender to Krishna. That is the constitutional position of the living being. And worldly dharma, as prescribed in the lower sections of the Vedic teachings, that is what is meant to gradually lead one towards Krishna consciousness. But others, they can't define dharma. They say, well, you know, it's a set of rules and regulations or sense of order within the universal harmony promoting and so many things. They cannot define dharma because they don't know what the constitutional position of the living being is. Dharma means that which is intrinsic to the living, being. Those who are envious of Krishna or ignorant of Krishna's position, they cannot understand actually what is the purpose of dharma. And therefore, they can't define it properly either. So this verse is spoken by Yamaraj to his followers, the Yamadutas. They were confused. The Yamadutas were confused. This man, Ajamil, he was a liar, a cheater, a lecherer, a rogue, a thief. What wrong didn't he do? Well, there are a few things in the modern age that people do commonly that probably Ajamil didn't do, such as smoking tobacco and causing abortions. And these are a few modern things that have been invented to add to the list of papas. Now, abortion is also mentioned in the Shastra as being highly sinful, but it wasn't a common, they didn't have abortion clinics. So anyway, Ajamil was the prime candidate for visiting Yamaraj. He had booked his easy journey to other planets. He was very easily going to Yamaloka with special accompaniment from the Yamadutas. Wow. He didn't even have to go himself, they came to bring him. But as they were taking him away, they were stopped by the Vishnu Dutas. Said, you can't take him. And they said, well, why not? This man is totally sinful. We should take him. The Narayan Dutas said that he's not at all sinful. He's completely pure. And the Yamadutas were totally confused. Because the one name of Yamaraj is Dharmaraj. He who upholds dharma. And dharma is it's fixed. It's not that it changes from day to day. That's why now people sometimes say, well, you know, all these Vedic rules, that was for the past. But just for your information, the laws of karma have not changed. So the Yamadutas came to Yamaraj and said, well, what happened, you know? What's going on? We were doing our duty under your protection. No one ever obstructed us like this before. And why should they? This man was sinful. He should be taken to Yamaloka. So then Yamaraj explained. He said, yes, you understand about dharma, but you only understand on a certain level. That I am ultimately, I am not the supreme controller. I am, just like you are my Dut, Yamaduta. So I am Narayan, I am also Narayan Duta. The Vishnu Dutas who came to stop you taking away Ajamil, their boss and my boss is the same. I'm also a Vishnu Duta. I'm one of them. I'm not against them as you are thinking. We have the same boss, just there in a different department. They're all government workers, but they're in one department, I'm in another department. Yeah. So what they did is correct. You may not be able to understand this, but it is the fact that anyone who chants the name Narayana, they become free from all sins. And you may say, why? And the answer is because that is given by Narayana himself. And he is the one who has given dharma. Dharmang tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam. Dharma is that which is given by Bhagavan, Narayana. His position is far above that of any others. And navai vidur rishiyo napi devaha. That is very difficult even for great rishis and devas to understand. Just like you see, all the different people are different. One rishi is defining dharma like this, another rishi is defining dharma like that. It's very difficult for them to understand. Nasidhamukya asura manushya kutonu vidyadhara charanadaraha. And even so many great personalities within the universe, they cannot give dharma. Only Narayana can give dharma. Dharmaraj is giving lessons in dharma to his followers. So as followers of the Vedic literature, it is our duty to understand what is dharma. Ultimately, dharma means to surrender to Krishna. But at the same time, we shouldn't think that all we should just give up these worldly dharmas. We shouldn't think, well, now I'm a devotee, I can just do whatever I like. Rather, one should follow these rules of worldly dharma inasmuch as they are supportive to Krishna consciousness. Because life is very complex and there are so many different permutations and combinations of possibilities, then exactly what to do in each individual circumstance, it is not possible to legislate by the rules of dharma. For instance, according to ordinary dharma, which corresponds to ordinary worldly morals, one should not speak an untruth. Therefore, satyam bruyat, speak that which is truth. Priyam bruyat, and speak that which is pleasing. Ma bruyat, satyam apriya. But don't say that which is even the truth if it is not pleasing. So even within ordinary, this is from Manu, so even within all ordinary worldly dharma, one is advised to exercise discretion in speaking. But Srila Prabhupada has described that in preaching the absolute truth, that this consideration does not apply. We should speak straightforwardly what is the truth. Even people may not like to hear it. Because sometimes something unpleasant may be needed to shake people, shake their consciousness into Krishna consciousness. Just like ordinarily, one should not stick a knife into someone's body. But in certain circumstances, the doctor may do so, causing intense pain to the patient. If there's an abscess, it has to be lanced. It is extraordinarily painful. I have personal experience several times. Even they put that dry ice, that frozen carbon dioxide, but still it's very painful. So if one was outside the hospital, if one was just on the street to push a knife into someone's body, that would be considered, that is a crime. But in the hospital, the doctor does, and it causes much pain, still it's considered, yes, he's done very well, and pay him money for it. So in the same way, in human life, day to day, how to behave, what to do, it can be very complex to know exactly what to do, even if one is guided by the scriptures. Therefore, it is required that we have gurus to guide us, at least in the major decisions of our lives. In every moment, we can't have the personal guidance. But at least for general guidance and for important decisions, we should take guidance. There may be various levels of guru also. First guru, according to Shastra's mother. And daily the children are supposed to come before their parents and offer respects. But first respect goes to mother. So parents are also gurus as long as they don't act like Hiranyakashipu and company. Parents are gurus, teachers, all this. Nowadays teacher, that's just another job. But they don't care for the children at all. And they're not fit to give moral guidance to the children. They need moral guidance themselves. I saw that when I was going to school, that the teachers themselves, they're most degraded kind of people. So then what to speak of the brahmanas and spiritual guides. So all mother, father, teacher, they're all supposed to be spiritual guides. But especially one is supposed to accept a spiritual guru to guide properly. And then one can understand how exactly to act in such a way that one can be elevated to Krishna consciousness in every step of life. This is the path of dharma, in synopsis. Hare Krishna. Is there any question? No question? Then we'll finish. And say, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Sure, there's no question. Usually what happens is we say no question, and then when they're finished, then people come up and ask questions. If you have a question, you can ask now. All right, so we're finished. If you like, you can write it down on a piece of paper. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Dharmam tu sakshad bhagavat pranitam. Yeah. Yeah, sir. Say it loudly.
The question is, like, when Ajamila chanted the holy name, he got liberation. And why it is not in every case, like, everybody's case? Like, we need not follow the rules and regulation for everybody, just we can chant the holy name.
Just chant the holy names at the time of death. No need to follow anything. So we should be like Ajamila. Loot, steal, kill, and at the end of life chant. But it won't, you say it won't happen in every case. You'll probably forget Narayana at the time of death. If you generally, unless we cultivate chanting throughout our lives, we won't remember to chant at the end of life. Ajamil's was an unusual case. That was his good luck. It may be that we chant during life, but we don't remember to chant at the time of death. That's also possible. Unless we're chanting very seriously. Of course, if we're chanting through life, we may forget Krishna, but he won't forget us. But that's better than us deliberately forgetting Krishna and hoping that he remembers us. This is regarding Gangamayi, who appeared in the time of the Ramayana, actually before that even. But in the pastime of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, she waited for the Lord's appearance. How is that? No, she was here in this world, but she was waiting. It's not that Ganga came only 500 years ago. Little bit of a mistake there. So, anything else? Yeah, please.
Following the regulative principles and chanting everything after the initiation or before the initiation, this also comes in the dharma, a spiritual dharma.
Yeah, this is called Bhagavad Dharma. That dharma which is directly connected with the Lord. Savai pung sang paro dharma yato bhaktirat hopsuje haitukiya pratyataya yatma supersedit. The param dharma, the topmost dharma, is that which transcendental or devotional service to the transcendent Lord, which is unmotivated and uninterrupted and therefore gives full satisfaction to the soul.
And
unmotivated. How do you say
it?
A haituki.
No personal.
No personal desire. Yeah.
So just relating to that. So what happens when we don't follow it? Actually, when we follow it, we attain the Supreme.
When we follow, what the question is, what happens when we don't follow Bhagavad Dharma? If we follow Bhagavad Dharma, we go to Krishna. And if we don't follow, then we don't go to Krishna. According to our karma, we become a cat, a dog, a mouse, a tree, an Indra, or whatever. But the dharma, that it's designed so that it leads to Bhagavad Dharma. The focus of Vedic society is on sacrifices, in which yajna, yajnapati, yajnabhuk, it means the personification of yajna, the lord of the yajna, the enjoyer of the yajna is Vishnu. Yeah, speak it in the mic.
There are different levels of dharma explained in the shastras, and it varies from time to time. It's very complex also. Give an example of using a knife in a hospital and a rope. So it differs. So how can we apply the dharma that is stated in the shastra for how you can understand this is applicable for this situation or something,
may go wrong. That I explained, then we have to follow our gurus who will explain what to do. So Srila Prabhupada explains so many things. He's our Acharya. And I'm compiling several books which are describing how to behave in different situations, how devotees should behave. I already produced that Brahmacharya and Krishna Consciousness for Brahmacharis. And Krishna willing, the next major book on this subject will cover all aspects of Vaishnava, of personal behavior, Vaishnava etiquette. Then I have to do a book on family life in Krishna Consciousness sometime. Anyone who's good in writing and has got 1 or 2 years free, they can come and help me with that. We'll do it. So I'm making some endeavor in this regard. But the basic principles of Vaishnavism, they apply to everyone. We should chant the holy name. Bhaja Krishna Bolo Krishna Gao Krishna Naam Krishna Bina Keho Kitya Nava Vihoan. Worship Krishna. Chant the name of Krishna. Bhaja Krishna Bolo Krishna. Sing the names of Krishna. Don't think of any other subject but Krishna. Then cultivating Chuna, the Pisuni, Chana, Tarara, Pisuni. These are the basic principles. So if we follow the basic principles very sincerely, then we will capture the essence of Vaishnava Dharma. And then for any particular complex situation, then we should take some guidance. This sounds like one of those more complex situations where you'll have to discuss and take personal guidance. We'll finish the class now. Hare Krishna.